everyone. Welcome to EHS This Week's podcast for the week ending August the 22nd. I'm Nicola DeCuna.
And I'm Allison Granke.
And we're bringing you the latest stories in environmental health and safety. So I'm going to start off today with a story about food safety in China. China is facing the ongoing challenge of ensuring quality and safety in their food supply chains. So a new agreement was signed in July between a U.S. university and a food safety research center in China to increase food safety in China and worldwide. The agreement outlines the plans for the Sino-U.S. Joint Research Center for Food Safety in China. What's interesting is that the signing of the agreement coincided with a tainted meat scare in China earlier this summer, when investigators found that expired and rotten meat from a food company had been incorporated into chicken products and beef patties that were used by several fast food restaurants in China. Several news organizations reported that Chinese investigators seized 100 tons of meat products and inspected hundreds of facilities. The meat scare represents the challenges of managing a safe supply chain of food in international markets such as China. As food and beverage companies expand their supply chains and operations globally, companies with multiple tiers of suppliers become more vulnerable. So being able to quickly identify the source of a food quality or safety issue is a major challenge for food manufacturers.
So what can organizations do to improve the safety and quality of food?
Well, organizations that adopt an automated food quality and safety management system can better manage end-to-end food quality, safety, and compliance processes all across their supply chain. So hopefully the new food safety center to be established can also positively impact food safety in China, and we don't hear about any more tainted food scares.
Absolutely. Speaking of scares, there's been a scary infographic circling around the internet this week. The infographic is titled, How Clean Is Your Workspace? And the stats are pretty frightening. According to The Source, a UK cleaning services group, the average workplace desk can be 400 times dirtier than the average toilet seat. Those of us who work in offices often think we work in a pretty healthy, safe environment. However, the typical office worker's hands come in contact with 10 million bacteria per day, and apparently one person carrying a virus will infect 50% of all equipment and employees in their vicinity within just 4 hours. In fact, it turns out that the equipment we're using on a daily basis that we don't spend much time thinking about is not as clean as we assume it is. There are about 16 million microbes on the typical office keyboard. And according to one survey, 11% of office workers said they never clean their keyboards, while only 54% of workers sanitize their keyboard more than once a month. It's a similar story with computer mice. 20% say they never clean their computer mouse. Again, this is a bigger issue than you might think because 80% of infections are spread via contact with contaminated surfaces, not coughing or sneezing as many people assume. 80% is also the number of people who say they will go to work sick. And presumably when they come into work sick, they come into contact with workplace equipment. And these viral microbes can actually survive for a pretty long time on your workplace equipment. The common cold lives for up to 72 hours on a computer keyboard or mouse, and the flu lives for around 60 hours, while E. coli microbes can last up to 500 days on workplace equipment. Pretty scary.
Why is it important for employers to know this information?
Well, the cost of illness is pretty high for employers, and statistics around the world prove this. So in the UK, 131 million days were lost to sickness absences in 2013, with the average worker losing 9.1 days to sickness. 95% of non-manual workers cited very minor illnesses, such as colds, cough, and flu, as the reason for their absence. In Canada, workers take an average of about 9.3 sick days, according to a report from the Conference Board of Canada, so quite similar to that UK average of 9.1. These absences cost the Canadian economy about $16.6 billion just in salary costs alone for these lost days. The story is a little bit different in the U.S., where employers are allowed to count sick days as vacation time. Their absenteeism rates are lower, but the economy still suffers from a loss of productivity associated with what researchers call presenteeism, which is when employees come to work but illness prevents them from performing at their best. So, in fact, one 2012 study estimates that U.S. employers lost $227 billion in productivity that year due to illness as the result of both employee absenteeism and presenteeism.
So what can employers do to decrease the odds of their workforce becoming sick?
Well, awareness is hopefully a good first step. Here at Intellix, we always make sure our office is stocked with disinfecting wipes that make it easy for employees to regularly wipe up their work areas. So that's a great tip, and it's a small investment to make that can have a big impact. You can also encourage your workers to take their lunch time and leave their desk to eat. Your desk is apparently 100 times less hygienic than the average kitchen table, yet almost 2 out of 3 employees say that they eat at their desk. break room sink faucet handles, microwave door handles, and refrigerator door handles are apparently the worst culprits for transmitting bacteria. So a smart employer might make an effort to ensure that these handles are also disinfected regularly. As for employees, don't count on a cleaning crew to keep your workspace as clean as it should be. If your employer doesn't provide disinfectant wipes, why not bring your own and make it a habit to wipe down your area at least once a week? And wash your hands regularly with hot water and soap. 30% of those surveyed said they only used water to wash their hands. So for more information and to take a look at the infographic for yourself, check out the resources section of this podcast. Nicola, I think you have a story from the CDC now?
Yes, so according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's report, there is an investigation into a bird flu incident where a lab scientist failed to follow guidelines when working, which led to the contamination of samples and an accidental shipment of bird flu. The August 15th report details the internal investigation of contaminated bird flu, which was shipped to a U.S. Department of Agriculture poultry research lab and another CDC lab. A culture of mild bird flu was inadvertently cross-contaminated with dangerous bird flu in January at the CDC influenza lab. So after tested chickens died, the USDA lab on May 23rd notified CDC of the contamination, according to the report. The CDC lab confirmed the contamination, but did not inform appropriate supervisors until July 9th. The delay in reporting was primarily due to a lack of sound professional judgment and insufficient or ambiguous reporting requirements for the most dangerous pathogens. CDC is also investigating lab safety after up to 84 workers were exposed to anthrax in June, which we previously reported, when samples were sent from one CDC lab to other labs. So hopefully these investigations can lead to improved safety and protocol. And if you're interested in reading the full report, it's available in our resources section below. Allison, I think you have a story on the National Safety Survey now.
Yeah, so the results of EHS Today's 2014 National Safety Survey are in. According to this year's survey, which received nearly 900 responses from EHS professionals, almost half of the respondents claimed that employee engagement was their number one goal for the upcoming year. The goal that came in second place for these EHS professionals was lowering their workplace injury and illness rate, closely followed by complying with new or existing regulations. The good news is that it seems that a large majority of the respondents, nearly 80%, do feel that their executives provide active, visible support for occupational health and safety. And about 64% feel that they work in organizations that prioritize safety over production or other business demands. When asked how they would describe the EHS program at their facility, the most common response was very good at 31%, with just good at 30.5%, and only 5.2% felt confident enough to label their EHS program world class, but just 3.4% believe their EHS program was poor.
One of the goals of this year's survey was to paint a clear picture of the typical EHS professional. Did the survey's answers give us any interesting information in that area?
Yeah, it did. So one interesting piece of information was that over a third of the respondents to this survey, 35% to be exact, have been in the safety profession for more than 20 years. Another third, 33%, said they have more than 10 years of experience. One out of every five respondents holds a master's degree, and 80% of the respondents said that they were certified safety professionals.
Are there any other interesting trends?
Well, out of a large list of common injury illness types, respondents were most likely to say that they are actively targeting slips, trips, and falls. The second most common injury type being actively targeted was cuts, lacerations, and punctures. EHS professionals seem to be less concerned about fractures, chemical burns or exposure, and caught in between injuries. Finally, it looks like 27% of EHS professionals are also running wellness programs, which is definitely a topic we've been hearing more about in the past year or so as well. And you can find links with more information on these survey results in the resources section of this podcast.
And I think that's it for the week. We hope you enjoyed this week's stories, and we'll talk to you next week.
Have a safe week, everyone.